You're listening to the Restoration Church podcast. And due to the current COVID-19 pandemic, we're still unable to gather as a whole family for worship. But we're confident that as we are scattered, God is still building his church. So you can watch our videos of our Sunday gatherings on Facebook Live on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. or go get home church resources and the videos at restorationlex.com/this week. Again, thanks so much for listening. Hey, Restoration family, what's up? Hey, home churches out there. Good to be with you. Hey, if you're watching here on Facebook Live, we're glad you're with us. Welcome. And while you're here, why don't you say hello there in the comment section? We love interacting with you guys. That's our favorite part about doing Facebook Live is being able to talk and share prayer requests. It's awesome. We love doing that. If you're watching, listening later in the week with your home church or on your own, however, whenever, we're just glad you're with us. And all of us throughout the week, this week, we're taking a big step forward in our restored journey. And this time we're calling it Encounters. And it comes at a big step forward in Israel's history. You see, last week we were in Exodus 32, and where we are this week, a lot of stuff happens in between. Moses dies, the people of God are led into the promised land by Joshua, at least the ones who are left alive, and they battle the Canaanites, they defeat them, and they take hold of the land that God had promised them so long ago through Abraham. So you might think, yes, this is it. This is the crescendo of the story, the happy ending, but man, it's not. In fact, the book of Judges and the book of Ruth, which takes place during this time too, it's one of the darkest periods in Israel's history. I mean, it's just full of violence and corruption and just a complete disregard for the covenant that they made with God. And in fact, they just forget who they are. So this week, as we come to 1 Samuel, it is a turning point in Israel's history. We start here in chapter 1, and we're introduced to this man by the name of Elkanah. And what the story tells us is that he's seemingly a devout man. He lives in the countryside outside of Jerusalem, and he has two wives, Peninnah and Hannah. And the story gives us a very important detail for us today about these two wives. Here's what it says. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now, in a patriarchal Near Eastern society, as we've talked about before, if you're a woman, you're at a cultural disadvantage. But if you are a childless woman, you're at even greater disadvantages. And beyond that, you're the source of shame. And so year after year after year after year, Hannah lived with that shame. And to make matters worse, the other wife in the family, which is a whole nother sermon right there, obviously, she ridiculed her. Here's what it says beginning in verse 4. It says, on the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously, to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. I mean, just imagine years of shame and the perception of your inadequacy on public display. Never being able to escape the gaze of people who are always looking at you and thinking you are less and that God is not blessing you. Was her husband any help? Well, let's look and see here as the story continues. It says, and Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? Can you imagine a more tone-deaf reaction to Hannah's pain than her husband in this moment? He is so arrogantly detached from the emotional weight that she carries that he says, am I not enough? Husbands, I dare you this week to say to your wives, am I not enough? And watch how quickly you get hit. I mean, this is so, so arrogant and just completely aloof and detached from what she's actually feeling. And to make matters worse, he's got a whole different family that lives in the same household. Man, imagine with Hannah how alone and how hurt and how misunderstood that she must have felt for years upon years upon years. And in her grief in the story, it says that she ran to the temple. It tells us, after they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. There in that temple, Hannah made a promise to God. Lord, if you'll give me a son, I'll give him right back to you. And as she prayed, the high priest, Eli, he begins to take notice of what's happening. It says, and she kept on praying to the Lord. Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine. Not so, my Lord, Hannah replied. I'm a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my grief and anguish. Eli answered, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. It seems as if a pattern is beginning to emerge. Once again, an arrogant, aloof, emotionally detached, powerful man stands over Hannah in her anguish and her grief and just dismisses it. I don't know if you've ever been in that place where you are so filled with brokenness, so full of grief, that when you try to pray, words just, they fail you. Or if you have cried so hard, so long, so deeply, that after a while there's not even sound coming out. That's where Hannah is in this moment. And the great irony of this story is that Eli's right there with her. Eli, the high priest, who in theory is supposed to be close to God, yet he looks upon one of the most beautiful, fervent acts of devotion and prayer and intimacy with God in the entire Bible, and the only word he has for it is drunkenness. He is so detached from who God is, so detached from God's presence, that he looks upon Hannah and sees weakness, whereas God looks upon Hannah and he sees strength. That's why she continues to pray. Notice her words again. She says, I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. Hannah wasn't praying around her anguish and grief. She was not praying in spite of her anguish and grief. What the Bible tells us is that Hannah was praying out of her anguish and grief. Her heartache, her pain, that's just the fertile soil from which the intimacy with God and prayer would grow in her life. It reminds me of another story in the Old Testament, one we didn't get to touch on in our restory journey, but it comes in Genesis chapter 16, just one chapter after what we looked at with Abraham, who in that chapter is promised by God, hey, you're going to be the father of many nations. Your descendants are going to be like the stars of the sky. And yet Abraham and Sarah decide in Genesis chapter 16, hey, we got to take that promise into our own hands. And so Hagar, their servant, they decide, Abraham, you're going to sleep with her. You're going to have a child with her. And he does. They have a child named Ishmael, and it goes horribly. Sarah, the matriarch of our faith, she abuses Hagar so severely that Hagar's like, I'm just going to go out into the wilderness and die. I'd rather go with my son and escape this. It's so bad. But whereas she is dismissed and disregarded by the world, God looks upon her with compassion. He sends the angel of the Lord. He cares for her, and not only just takes care of her, he speaks hope and a future for her and her son. And in response, she says these beautiful words. She says, you are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. What good news. God, he sees the people we judge. He sees the people we overlook. He sees the people we stereotype. He sees the people we forget. He sees the people we push aside. And when we are those people, God sees us. Back in the story of Hannah, God hears her prayers. And after such a long wait after so long living in that shame, her pain is over. Verse 20 says this. It says, so in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him. That name Samuel, it sounds similar in Hebrew to the phrase heard by God. She literally named her son, God hears me. When no one else could hear Hannah's heart, God could. And after weaning Samuel, probably around the age of 3 years old, she takes him to the temple and she offers him there to Eli to live, to be trained for the rest of his days. And Samuel, this Samuel that she prayed for, would become the architect of the turning point in Israel's history, a great prophet who would turn God's people back to him. And the blessing, it didn't stop for Hannah. It says later on in chapter 2, she had 3 more sons and 2 more daughters. When no one else could see her heart, her pain, God did. God saw her, he heard her, and he loved her in places, in ways that no man or no one else ever could. I can't help but think that for us to really enter into this story, we have to be willing to enter into the emotions of the story. We have to feel Hannah's tears. We have to feel her heartache, her struggle. It's why Psalms 34 tells us that the righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all of their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Hannah's story, it's a testimony to the fact that God, he is not afraid of our emotions. Instead, he meets us within them. He meets us right where we are. Both her husband and the high priest dismiss all the pain, all the emotions that she feels, that pours out of her in her time of grief. But the God that we meet in this story meets us too in our emotions and the pain we feel and the reality of where we actually are, no matter how raw that may be. In his book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, which I highly recommend, Pete Scazzaro, he wisely says, when we deny our pain, losses, and feelings, year after year, we become less and less human. We transform slowly into empty shells with smiley faces painted on them. Sad to say, that is the fruit of much of our discipleship in our churches. But when I begin to allow myself to feel a wider range of emotions, including sadness, depression, fear, and anger, a revolution in my spirituality was unleashed. My friends, listen, I know it's hard to meet God in our emotions. Us men, let me speak to us as men, us in particular, it's hard. We've been conditioned to understand our emotions and the sharing of those emotions as weakness. And so instead, it's far easier to numb what we feel. It's far easier to distract us from what we feel than to step into that pain, to see around it, to push it aside, instead of with God having the courage then to confront it. Because when we confront that, let's be honest, it feels sometimes like death, like barrenness. But it's in that death that God always brings resurrection. It reminds me of another weeping woman in John chapter 11. Mary, Martha, they've just lost their brother, and Jesus, one of their closest friends, he comes to them in the moment of their deepest grief over the death of their brother. And what does the God of the universe do in the midst of their grief and emotions? He weeps. Jesus weeps. The God who made Mary, Martha, and Lazarus with his hands weeps. Friends, what you need to know today about God is that he's waiting to meet you where you really are and not where you're pretending to be. Let me say that again. God wants to meet you where you really are and not where you're trying to project to yourself and to others that you think you are. And what Hannah's story tells us, what is clear here, is that we are to let our heartache, to let our emotions, let everything we feel drive us not away from God, but towards Him in prayer and intimacy. So the challenge for us this week, the challenge for our home churches, for us as individuals, is to bring your pain to God. Bring your anchor. Bring your hopelessness. Bring your anxiety. Bring your fear. Bring your sadness. Meet God where you really are and not where you're pretending to be. And as you do, remember our story, the big story that we find ourselves in. Where there is death, God always brings resurrection. See, with Lazarus and Mary and Martha, the same Jesus that weeps with them is the same Jesus who walks to the tomb and calls him out of death into life. I'll close with this beautiful promise from Psalm chapter 30 that tells us, Lord, you turn my wailing into dancing. You remove my sackcloth and clothe me with joy, that my heart may sing your praises and not be silent. Lord my God, I will praise you forever. This week in our home churches and on our own, I encourage us to process through what we actually feel in this moment. Talk about together the difference between where we really are and where we're trying to pretend to be for ourselves, for others, the way we're projecting a false sense of security and togetherness, trying to make it look like we have it all together, especially in this pandemic moment where we are so emotionally drained. What would it look like to be open, not only with God, but with our brothers and sisters in Christ in our home church about what we really feel in this moment, and then together to bring that to God? You're going to find questions and resources at restorationlex.com/this week. This week, I'm going to put some emotionally healthy spirituality. There's a ton of resources with that that help us talk about our emotional health and why that impacts our spiritual journey. So, so, so important. You can find that, again, at restorationlex.com/this week. There's also a link right there on the front page to our Restory Journey where you can get the reading plan and other resources. Guys, this is so, so big for us to step into this journey together as a community. We need one another as we're experiencing the pain that all of us are feeling in a very, very difficult time. Let's bring those things together, and then together let's bring them to God. So again, restorationlex.com/this week. You can give there. Kids resources. I love seeing families using the family worship guide. Awesome. Love that. Love what your generosity is doing. Prayer requests, all those stuff. Let's continue to press in together restoration and see what God is doing as we offer our lives up to Him. I love y'all so much. I love this church. I love what He's continuing to do. We'll talk to you in the Deeper Look podcast. You can listen to that. You can find tons of stuff there as well. And we'll see you back in this space next week. Love y'all.